25 years ago today, Lloyd Dobler raised a boombox over his head and changed the world of movie boyfriends forever. All my instincts, they return. Linda Holmes of our pop culture blog Monkey See was a teenager when she first saw the film Say Anything. She says all these years later, she has a new appreciation of it.
Lloyd Dobler is played by John Cusack. He's the 19-year-old at the center of Cameron Crowe's 1989 story about a boy, a girl, and her father. The girl is Diane, brilliant, beautiful, and shy. Her protective father is very flawed. When her dad persuades Diane to break up with Lloyd, he goes to her house and plays that Peter Gabriel song in the driveway toward her window, hoping she'll reconsider. Crowe has deep empathy for the uncertainty that comes with the end of high school. Doubt is everywhere. When a friend warns him about getting hurt in this relationship, Lloyd is undeterred. "I want to get hurt," he enthuses. Crowe wrote other rash, restless dreamers in films like Jerry Maguire and Almost Famous, but Lloyd is his best work. Lloyd has doubt, but no fear. He is as determined in the arenas of love and happiness as other movie heroes are in the arenas of sports and competition. He has no game, really. He courts Diane by wrapping her in his transparent, guileless affection. In 1989, John Hughes had finished a run of films about high school in which the fantasy was that someone unattainable, someone rich, popular, or rebellious, might notice you. Crowe presented a different fantasy, that a very good person might fall in love with you. When I first saw Say Anything, I was 18. I'm sure that boombox scene seemed like the most romantic idea a movie had ever had. Watching it 25 years later, the most romantic scene for me now is near the end. It's when we learn that Lloyd has helped Diane write and rewrite a very difficult letter to her father. It turns out Lloyd and Diane didn't just kiss or drive off in a convertible. They did these difficult, real things together. Showboating is easy. Partnership is hard. Lloyd is a partner, not just a boyfriend. Different, even if he doesn't know why. At one point, a guy asks him how he got Diane to go out with him. "How come it worked?" the guy asks. "What are you?" And he says, "I'm Lloyd Dobler."
Linda Holmes writes and edits NPR's entertainment blog, Monkey See. Next, it's time for the regular feature we call In Your Ear. That's where we invite some of our guests to tell us about the top songs on their playlists. We caught up with Muslim pop star Yuna earlier this year, and she told us about some of her favorite tunes.
Hey, I'm Yuna, and what's playing right now in my ears? Drake, In Time. You a flower child, beautiful child, I'm in your zone. Looking like you came from the 70s on your own. My mother is 66, and a favorite line that hit me with is who the wants to be 70 and alone. I love the song because it features Jinny Aoki. My favorite line in this song is, "I love me enough for the both of us." I love me. I love me enough for the both of us. That's why you trust me. I know you've been through more than most of us. Another song that I'm listening to is Paper Doll by John Mayer, and the reason why I love this song is because it kind of like a reminiscent of the earlier version of John Mayer that I really love. Paper doll, come try it on. Step out of that black chiffon. Here's a dress of gold and blue. Sure was fun being good to you.
My friends and I, we've cracked the code. We count our dollars on the train to the party, and everyone who knows us knows that we're fine with this. We didn't come for money.
And another song that I'm listening to right now is Royals by Lorde. She's amazing. I feel like, you know, she's about to change the music industry, and I'm really proud of her. So yeah, Royals.
Everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. Royals.
It's a one. That was singer Yuna telling us what's playing in her ear. To hear our previous conversation with her, head over to npr.org, click on the Programs tab, and go to Tell Me More.
You can call me Queen Bee, and baby, I'll rule. Let me live that fantasy.
The FX Cable Network premieres a new drama series tonight. It's called Fargo and has the same title as the 1996 Coen Brothers movie. Our TV critic David Bianculli says it's a wonderful show in that same wacky spirit, but he says it's just as important to note what this new Fargo is not. It's not a remake, and it's not a sequel.
The 1996 Coen Brothers Fargo film is a brilliant movie. Let's start there. If you've seen it, chances are you haven't forgotten it and smile a bit just at the mention of it. William H. Macy became a star by playing the Minnesota accents and cadences like a violin, while portraying a hapless Midwesterner caught up in a series of increasingly bizarre illegal activities. Pregnant cops and cranky hitmen, dead bodies and stashes of mysterious money. All of it played out in the movie Fargo like a series of delightful character studies and kooky confrontations. It was like a Looney Tunes cartoon come to life in the numbing snow. So when the news arrives that FX has a new series called Fargo, the expectation is that it will be either a sequel to or expansion of that 18-year-old movie. And certainly, the previews have done nothing to discourage that. But no. The TV version of Fargo tells a completely different story with completely different characters. Only the snow remains the same. Yet based on the first four episodes, this new Fargo is a worthy companion piece to the film. The Coen brothers are on board as two of the executive producers, so they clearly approve, though that's pretty much the extent of their involvement. Instead, FX's Fargo is written and concocted by Noah Hawley, whose previous credits include working on Bones and not much else. This is his step up to the major leagues, and in his first at-bat in the bigs, he swings hard and hits a home run. His Fargo, this first season anyway, is envisioned as a standalone 10-part story. If it continues to a season two, it will be with a completely different plot, characters, and cast. That's the way True Detective launched itself this season on HBO, and you know how brilliantly that turned out. By designing TV shows this way, longer and deeper than a feature film but not running for years, networks can get A-list movie talent to commit, and writers can craft stories with the end in sight from the start. FX's Fargo benefits from that greatly. Its central character, a bullied, cowering shell of a man named Lester Nygaard, is played by Martin Freeman, who's already starring in two other concurrent franchises, as Bilbo Baggins in the Hobbit films and as Dr. Watson in TV's Sherlock. And playing Lauren Malvo, the sinister enforcer and hitman who crosses Lester's path, is Billy Bob Thornton, who hasn't taken a regular TV series role in 20 years, since he was a supporting player on the John Ritter sitcom Hearts of Fire. And that was before Thornton wrote and starred in his breakout movie, Sling Blade. It's easy to see, though, why he came back to TV for Fargo. Lauren Malvo is a bit like the hitman in No Country for Old Men, unpredictable, quirky, and definitely dangerous. But Lauren Malvo also enjoys his work a lot. He's like a little kid who kicks an anthill just to see how the ants will react. And all the people around him, as he sees it, are ants. Here he is in the premiere episode, sitting in the waiting room of an ER to take care of a glancing head wound. He's seated next to Lester, played by Martin Freeman. Lester is there with a broken nose because he's just been victimized by Sam Hess, an old acquaintance. And the more Lorne Malvo hears of Lester's story, the more he can't resist offering his opinion, and maybe his services.
If I was any kind of man, I'd have shown that Sam what's what.
Sam?
Yes. The bully in high school is a bully now.
So why didn't you? Join what's what?
Well, his... He had his sons with him, and...
You let a man beat you in front of his children to send them a message?
No, that's not... Heck. Just...
In my experience, if you let a man break your nose, the next time he tries to break your spine.
Sam, no way. I mean, I don't think. It just, I guess I embarrassed him in front of his boys.
You embarrassed him?
Yeah, by, he was telling me about a time where he and my wife, they were, but he didn't know she was my wife is the thing. And when I told him.
This man slept with your wife, and you're worried about embarrassing him.
Not slept. No, they didn't. He said it was just... She has soft hands, see, and I guess...
Mister, we're not friends. I mean, maybe we will be someday. But I gotta say, if that were me in your position... I would have killed that man.
It's a great scene. And both actors play it with an understatement and a sense of timing that makes it even funnier. Martin Freeman, remember, was one of the stars of the original British version of The Office, so he's great at this. And so is Thornton. Fargo, like the movie, is full of wonderful acting and delightful dialogue and very clever visuals. And as the series develops, each episode offers new riches, new flashbacks, and even new characters and actors. The roster of co-stars in this 10-part limited series is almost absurdly deep. Current or former cops are played by Bob Odenkirk from Breaking Bad, Colin Hanks from Dexter, Keith Carradine from Deadwood. And what's essentially the Frances McDormand role from the movie Fargo, as the cop who's smarter than anyone around her, is played here by Alison Tolman, a relative unknown who won't be unknown for much longer. And on the bad guy side of the fence... This TV Fargo makes room for Oliver Platt, Adam Goldberg, Kate Walsh, and plenty of others. Like True Detective and the best seasons of FX's American Horror Story, TV's Fargo suggests very strongly that limited series are the wave of TV's future. For now, make it part of your present.
David Bianculli is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. He reviewed the new TV series Fargo, which premieres tonight on FX. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.V. Nesper. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
In the day, the only reason you might watch BBC America would be to watch reruns of British TV shows like EastEnders. But now the network's doing original programming too. They have a new hit with the sci-fi drama Orphan Black. Its second season starts tomorrow. The show just won a Peabody Award. The committee called lead actress Tatiana Maslany a marvel. The show starts with Maslany playing a British con artist named Sarah, She thinks she's an orphan, but then she keeps discovering all these people who look exactly like her but have totally different personalities. She eventually learns they are clones, part of some weird science experiment. Here's the main character, Sarah, meeting one of her clones for the first time. This one's a Canadian soccer mom. And keep in mind, Maslany is playing both parts.
Please, just tell me, who are we to each other?
Are you kidding me?
That is not my responsibility. You need to get out of here. Hey, tell me what the hell.
Let go. Don't touch me.
Maslany says she has a lot of the soccer mom in her, but the character she says she's most like is another clone named Kasima. She's a PhD student in evolutionary developmental biology, or Evo-Devo.
Yeah, I'm Evo-Devo. That's what we call it here.
She's the science, but she's also, in a lot of ways, the heart. She has this fascination with people and with science and with biology, so this is really fascinating to her.
She's named after the science advisor to the show, right?
Yeah, that's right. Graham Manson's, who's one of the creators of the show, his good friend Kasima, is who we sort of based the character on. And I just watched her talk about clones, and the way she talked about science was the same way that I've seen my friends talk about art.
By the end of the first season, Maslany ends up playing 7 different clones from all over the world. Each one has her own look, mannerisms, speech. Some of them have different accents.
I studied French, German, and Spanish, and ancient Greek. I don't know why. That was a total misstep. Never used it.
Super useful, yeah.
Yeah, super useful.
Because, you know, a couple of the characters, one's Ukrainian, one's German.
I brought the briefcase. Yeah, the samples for your friend Beth. I was careful.
Well, that's my background, German and Ukrainian. So those sounds were familiar to me. And where you come from says a lot about how you express yourself. You know, language is so specific to each culture.
Maslany says she's made a playlist for each clone. And the way she gets into character is to listen to the music.
Music, to me, moves me so differently depending on what kind of music it is. It changes my mood. It changes my sort of my physicality, everything. So I've used music for each specific character, like Sarah, the sort of English punk girl. You know, a lot of The Clash, The Streets, Dizzy Rascal, The Prodigy, and stuff like that. You know, Breathe was the song that was kind of her heartbeat. It was dancing around, being inspired by the music and allowing it to change the way that I stood or the way that I moved. And I knew that I had to differentiate these women. I knew that I couldn't kind of do the same thing for each of them.
There are so many scenes in the show where you're interacting with yourself. You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes even 3 different versions of you. I mean, at some points you're just like sitting on the couch, but other places you're like fighting with yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, how technically does this happen?
We use a specific camera that's called the Techno Dolly, which memorizes camera movements. And then it's so hard to explain this early in the morning, but it involves me being there and looking at often a tennis ball across from me and sort of watching the tennis ball walk across the room.
So basically this robot camera just kind of memorizes the moves in both scenes so you can sync it up later in the editing room.
Yeah,
is that an okay way to describe it?
That's a really okay way to describe it. And, you know, we can also watch back the playback on the day because the technology is so advanced. We can actually see when my eye line isn't, you know, if I'm looking at my hand instead of at my face, or if, you know, or if I'm putting
it. You just have to retake it.
Exactly. And so it's very specific and very detailed.
It's clearly a really fun and challenging project. But do you also think it's important? I mean, in the way that a sci-fi show can be, do you think this is something that's kind of a conversation about science and what we may be able to do with our bodies in the future?
To me, the clones represent the many ways our lives could go, the many possibilities for any one person. And to me, it's interesting to, at the end of season one, we sort of find out that the clones have been patented. And that always resonated for me as a woman, to have this idea of our bodies not being our own. There's this media ownership over the images of women's bodies. And there's such an emphasis on your body representing who you are and defining who you are and also fitting into a specific box. And I feel that's a very resonant theme for young women like myself and especially women in this industry.
Tatiana Maslany is the star of Orphan Black. The new season starts Saturday on BBC America.